Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast, where we help you make disciples in our increasingly post-Christian world. My name is Eric Bryant. I'm one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, Texas, along with the founder of Catalyzing Community. You can go to ericbryant.org to sign up for my email newsletter to receive free resources. On today's episode, I have Derek Webster with me. How are you doing, Derek?
Doing well, Eric. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. You are now the president of Missions Door. I think we met, goodness, it has to be 20 years ago or so, when you were a missionary over in Europe. So you've been reaching people in a post-Christian world, and you came to the States and mobilized a church to be on mission. And now you're working with missionaries all over the world. Tell us a little bit about Missions Door. What do you do with them?
Missions Door is a 76-year-old global missions organization, and I'm the fourth president in its history. And we do something really significant in the world of missions and very unique in the world of missions. When you think about missions, you think about an S curve, right? So 0 to 1, that's cross-cultural missions. There's no witness there. I'm going to go in and share the gospel. And I did that for about 10 years. And then there's a space where it kind of moves up. And we have like 2,000 years of missions history at this point, so we know how this goes. And that's people who train nationals. So what happens is somebody comes in and then someone says, we should do a T for T or a creation of Christ or pick your curriculum. And they come in, we're going to train all the nationals, and then hopefully leaders will emerge from that. And then what happens is when nationals begin to own the gospel movement in their context, most missions organizations leave. And there's very little that's happening there, but weirdly, that's the most crucial part of the gospel movement. And what happens is most missions organizations, they kind of get to that space and they go, okay, all leaders are the same. They're all national leaders. It's just, they focus on the fact that it's a local. But we believe in the locality so much so that we don't even really begin at on what we call a multiplier level unless they're a local. But we look at their leadership capacity, because some leaders add, some leaders subtract, some leaders divide, you know, some leaders can grow it into the ground. So for Missions Door to step in, it's generally they're already leading a couple of things. And it's a really unique space, and it's an important space, because we know historically that from that moment, if you have that multiplier leader, the gospel really explodes in the area, because they can connect opportunity with leadership development and micro businesses and social development, all those platforms that so the gospel can really kind of take root. And then what happens is the colors kind of come back, right? It gets light red again, and then it gets kind of dark red in the sense that there's a lot of competition once you have big structures up, and then everybody's like, you should go to my school, but look at us over here. So we occupy that space. It's unique to Missions Door. It's really important. Our vision is a world full of local churches, and our mission is to be the world's best at identifying, resourcing, networking, and encouraging local multipliers everywhere.
That is a fantastic vision, and I want to hear more about how you find that multiplier, because in many ways, what you're looking for is an Apostle Paul, yeah, right, in different places on the planet. Talk about what makes someone a multiplier.
Yeah, and that's a great question. That's really kind of the crux of it, right? And you've really struck the crux of it, which is how do you identify that? Richard Branson, I think, said after all of his hiring and firing, he's about 50-50 on great hires. We actually really are right now one of the world's best. We're at about 63% in terms of being able to identify that. There are several markers of it. First, it takes one to know one. Second, you know them by their fruit. So again, we don't really come in until they're already leading a couple of things. And that can be two churches, that can be a church and a business, that can be two groups, that can be other leaders. But we're already looking for the evidence of someone who multiplies naturally. And so in some sense, we're able to come in and kind of assess that. We're also really big on character, because you're passing along the DNA of the planter. You know, in some ways, the way to think about Missions Door is not through a Pauline lens, but it's really think about one of the first commissions of Jesus, in that, you know, people think that Matthew 25 is it's a great commission and Acts begins with that and we all get sent out to the world. But Jesus was commissioning far earlier than that. In fact, you think about the story of the demoniac in the Decapolis, right? And this is not Jewish territory. That's why there's pigs. That's why there's an industry. And Jesus frees this local. And then this local begs him, let me go with you. I'm the only guy here. Like, please let me go with you. And Jesus says, no, go back to your locality and proclaim. And really, that's a great starting place for us. Think Timothy, maybe even more than Paul. So Timothy, half Gentile, half Jewish, Paul circumcises him. And you think, why? Well, Paul tells us. He says so that he can continue to have the credibility with both audiences. So when Paul sends Timothy, where does he send them? He sends them to context, cultural context, that's familiar to Timothy, which is really cool when you think about it, so that Timothy can continue to work across both of those worlds, because it's a world that he comes from. And so we, you know, that's largely kind of what we do. And the way we identify that, like I said, takes one to know one. So we have our local multipliers that identify them. We look at what they're already doing. We look at their character. We have several metrics that we look at.
Well, and I've had a chance to be with many in your organization at a beautiful retreat in the Dominican Republic. And, you know, I met some folks that are focusing on reaching, people from a Jewish background in the Northeast, college students in Mexico, met a pastor from the Ukraine. Where are some of the places that you're focused? I know originally you kind of were more of a North America, if I remember right, and it's of turned into a global missions organization. Talk about that for a moment.
Well, we stumbled really into our future. We're 76 years old. Missions is 2,000 plus years, right? So we just kind of learned the hard way. We, at one point in our history, because we did start in North America, then that extended to the Americas, and now we're global. I began this year in El Salvador. I'll end the year in Cambodia. We have folks in Africa. We have folks in Eastern Europe and Western Europe. So really everywhere. But we kind of stumbled into it in that, you know, we would send people from Alabama to like inner city Chicago and then wonder why it didn't work. And we just went, okay, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe let's look at this from a cultural lens. So the beauty of what we do is, and you're right, we have these stories of folks. I'll just share just one story of, I can grab many of them because we have that kind of quality. But to give you an idea of the arc of it, San Pedro Sula, Honduras, was the murder capital of the world for 10, 15 years, something like that. Like if you sampled all the large cities and their murder rates, they were number one, going away, like with a bullet. And they didn't kill foreigners because they were too smart. They killed nationals. And the reason that they would kill each other is because the gangs controlled the city. There were about 15 gangs that controlled that city. And the borders were porous, right? Territories shifted. Well, anyway, there was a guy there by the name of Arnold, still there. But Arnold manages to avoid the gangs. Guy gets a hold of his life. He makes his way to Bible school, and he has one ambition, right? And what's his ambition? Lord, give me a church that's not in San Pedro Sula, like anywhere.
Anywhere but there.
Send me somewhere other than here. Because he grew up there. He knew, you know. And so he and his wife are praying, and God's like, no, you're going to go back to your home. I want you to plant churches there. And he's like, I don't want to do that. And God goes, well, you don't belong to you. You belong to me. And that's the beauty of the lordship of Jesus. He has to move the pieces around. It also brings, by the way, that call brings in a humility on the part of the person going, right? So anyway, so Arnold goes back to the city, and he's got to start somewhere. He doesn't, you know, I don't know what to do. So he's got, like, he's got his Bible. He's going to go, and he's just praying, Lord, contact with people. He goes back to the area he's from, so he knows that area a little bit. It's a section of the city. Anyway, he wanders over, I think it was with his daughter, his young girl at the time, accidentally wanders into another gang-controlled area because the borders had shifted. And then he was surrounded by machetes. And he thought, this is it. And, you know, there was his daughter. He said, well, that was a short-lived church planting experience, you know. And he just has no idea. This guy comes up. He's bald. He's got tats coming up his neck, on his head. Arnold has no idea. He's clearly the gang leader. He comes over and he goes, Arnold, is that you? Uh-huh. And Arnold doesn't recognize him. And he goes, yeah, it's me. And he goes, hey, and he mentions his name. They played grade school soccer together.
Wow.
And out of that, they have this conversation, and this gang leader goes, hey, listen, my gang members are bored. And so it'd be great if we could get like a gang soccer league together just to expend some energy that could go in the wrong place. And Arnold's like, are you aware of why I'm here? This is like, I'm going to share the gospel. You understand that I'm here to plant church? Yeah, no, I get it. Because the guy's thinking, Jesus, religion, that's not going to happen, right?
Right.
Anyway, they start a soccer league for gangs. Arnold is given, all the gang leaders agree, he can go anywhere in the city now. Nobody's allowed to touch him.
Hmm.
And anybody who's with him, nobody's allowed to touch him. So they have this thing, gang members get saved. Now they have a different problem. He started a small group. He's got his church going. They're like, we have to get out of San Pedro Sula. He's like, why? He says, why do you think we joined gangs? There's no employment here.
Hmm.
So he goes to, I think it's his ambassador. And he goes, hi, I'm Arnold. I'm trying to plant churches. We need to start businesses. And he goes, do you have any idea of what businesses you want to start? And he goes, well, like, here's a handful of ideas. Have you ever planted a business? No. Do you know how to do business? No, I need coaching. Or someone needs coaching. Could you get a coach here? And we have no money. Like, if we could get financing. He goes, who are you again? And he goes, I'm a pastor. He goes, oh, actually, let me get you in touch with the U.S. ambassador as well. We want to do a joint project. And maybe there's something UN we can do. Anyway, the UN goes, yeah, we'll do that as long as we can take pictures and like post it. So long story short, and Arnold's like, sure, take whatever pictures you want. Just, you know, I'm trying to get this thing done. There's pictures of him with like Hillary Clinton and like, you know, all these UN business. Anyway, a New York Times reporter comes and does a story on it, and he sees what is happening. He happens to be a Christian, happens, right? This is all God stuff, and says, I'm going to advocate for you. And so now he has print, right, advocacy. So now here's what happens. So now they stay. Today they have 13 pastors and different congregations around the city. They've shut down 5 gangs.
Wow.
And the unique thing, and I would love to say this is completely unique in Mission Store, but it's not. I can cite chapter, verse, story after story in college contexts, in communities like what Arnold's doing there in Honduras and around Honduras and different parts of the world. I can cite it in castaway groups like ethnic castaways or social castaway groups like addiction communities, Cross and the Switchblade. That church is a Mission Store church. And they have incredible ministry, former addicts, starting literally church planting movements to former addicts or to addicts to start these churches. They're called recovery houses of worship. Anyway, but what's great, what's unique about it is now you have to think about how does cross-cultural missions work in that context? Outsiders can't get to San Pedro Sula. He can't bring in teams. Now he can now, but not into the inner city part. He can do it more on the outskirts. And then who's going to believe in it? If you have a national going, here's what God told me to do. What missions organization goes, oh yeah, that's what we do. Well, as it turns out, that's what Missions Door does. That's what we do.
Amazing.
And so we love that kind of everywhere. In Punta Cana, you heard the story of our Ukrainian planter.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And here's a guy going, yeah, my family had to get out. They took over our house. We've decided to expand our territory and try and start more churches in the middle of this thing because people need God.
Yeah.
And you just see that everywhere. Melissa and I were in SoCal 2 weeks ago, and I'll stop after this, but we were driving to the Mojave Desert. And I'm not a big desert guy. I've almost never looked at a desert and thought, this is beautiful. I should live here.
Right.
And as we're driving out, we see like these really, you know, these blink towns that you see out in the desert, like blink and you miss.
Yes, sure.
In fact, there was like a cluster of old RVs that it looked like who lives there? Who is, you know? And as we're going, I'm just like, man, you know, how does God reach this group? We go to meet Larissa Craig and for dinner, and she comes in and she goes, this is my area. These are my people. If it's over 3,000, that's not what I minister. And so she has a whole different strategy for reaching them, and is effective. She's been doing it for a while. So God's just doing some great things.
That's beautiful. It's missionsdoor.org. And as the fourth president, I just couldn't be more excited for the future of what you're doing. Love this idea of finding and raising up multipliers. I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about your most recent book, Your Mess, God's Masterpiece. Talk a little bit about what you were trying to convey in that book. How can this book be an encouragement to those listening?
Yeah, that's a book on spiritual maturity and the process of spiritual maturity. And but what it does is it views that process through the lens and the story of the life of Joseph. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, one of our markers is character. And people tend to forget that God actually, if he's Lord, he has the ability to move you around. And a part of that movement, a part of even the difficulties of life, is shaping you for his purposes and his mission. Hmm. Joseph, one of the most poignant parts of that book, and in my view, and I share some personal things in that book as well, but you know, when Joseph is in prison, there's a 2-year gap between the time that he meets the cupbearer and the baker and the time he's in front of Pharaoh. And it's funny because his last words to the cupbearer, "Hey, listen, remember me when you get out."
Don't
and then he hears nothing for 2 years.
Yeah.
Nothing. And by the time he stands in front of Pharaoh, it's really interesting. He's no longer saying, "Hey, maybe there's a way out of here." Instead, he's saying, "Listen, I can't do this, but God can." Mm. And then God goes, "Okay, now I can use you." You know, and of course, it becomes really, you can argue, the most powerful man in Egypt at that time. And God uses him to save his people. There's a whole story arc of redemption with his family and everything. So the book was really designed to help people navigate the mess of their life, but get a perspective on it so they can have a sense that maybe God's doing something in me to position me for his purposes and to provide some hope there.
That's beautiful. Well, we're going to give away a few free copies to those who are signed up for my email newsletter there at ericbryant.org. Derek, it's always good to see you. Thank you so much for spending some time, and keep up the amazing work.
Eric, listen, man, love you and love everything that you're doing at Gateway. Love this podcast. You're doing some incredible things in the world. You know, we've known each other for so long, and I've so admired you. Really deeply admired you for many, many years. And so, and thank you for being an encouragement. Thank you for being a friend, but also thank you for pressing on a mission. You know, it's really significant. It matters.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks for joining us on the Post Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.